of angels and the roles that they have played. We have talked, as we've begun this discussion, about angels and a role that they play in caring for us. In general, what we've been talking about is, at this point, entirely positive. However, there are more roles that angels play. One of the roles that angels play is an involvement in what I have concluded is the giving of the Old Testament, as opposed to the New Testament. And the reason that I say that is a kind of oblique statement, just something that's said in passing in Hebrews, the second chapter. Can I get somebody to read verses 1 through 4? Yeah, go ahead, Mandy.
Turn your mic on first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
There we go. Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast, and every transgression and every disobedience received just as recompense of the reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed us by them that heard him? God, also bearing them witness, both with signs and wonders and with divers miracles and gifts of the Holy Ghost according to his own will.
So what do you see there in terms of specifically angels?
Steadfast words were spoken.
Okay. They spoke some steadfast words. Okay, Carol?
They spoke words that God said, and then he confirmed them with miracles and wonders and signs and gift of the Holy Spirit according to his own word.
Well, I think that verse 4 is probably a reference to those that heard him, those that, from verse 3, those that heard Jesus speaking.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think it's a reference to what God confirmed in the Old Testament. Although, I can see how that you could look at the Old Testament, the word given by angels, and you could see confirmation that it had come from God. But here in Hebrews, I think specifically the reference is probably to the apostles who had heard Jesus, who then continued the teaching. But this is, I say, in my mind, this is the Old Testament as opposed to the New Testament. And part of the reason that I say that is that we are responding to the words spoken by Jesus as opposed to the words spoken by angels. And that makes me conclude that the word spoken by angels that was steadfast, that's Old Testament. Okay? Just interestingly, so that you'll know, the term for angel here is the same term that we've been looking at consistently, particularly statements by Peter, how the angels are ministering servants to us. It's the same word. So, when I first read this and I was first thinking about it, I thought, well, maybe this is a different kind of word, that what he's saying when he says this is the word that was given by angels or a messenger of God that might have reference to Moses as the angel or the messenger of God. Yeah, Bill.
And Job, when the sons of God came to speak with God, the adversary or the devil was with them. So he's considered an angel. And what he spoke was all lies.
Okay, that's true.
Not every angel was carrying God's proper message.
That's true. And we'll see that when we look at demons and when we look at Satan himself. But that's a good point.
Everything that Jesus said was truth for warfare.
Everything Jesus said was true because he could speak it of himself. He is God. And that lends a different credibility to the New Testament than what was given in the Old Testament. Okay? So I'm not precisely sure how the word was spoken by angels. It may be that they were the mediaries, the intermediaries, that gave the word to the prophets, gave the word to Moses. I don't know. But, I mean, the word was written down by Moses and the prophets, some of them historians, some of them priests, but the word was written down by them in the same way that the word was written by New Testament writers. However, it differs in that the word that was given that forms the corpus or the core of the New Testament was first preached by Jesus. So it somehow is different. But like Bob said, their words were steadfast, no different than the words that we have today. They were steadfast. And God expected people to respond. Yeah.
And if it actually is referring to the Old Testament, the people of the age knew that was steadfast because they had all that history and they could prove it.
Well, it was steadfast. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, when he's writing the book of Hebrews, he's writing basically to Jews who were well aware of all of that history. And yes, they would say, hey, this stuff, God said things in the Old Testament, it actually happened. And so they could rely on that. So somehow, this is a little bit different from saying that God has messengers or servants who are ministering spirits for us. This indicates that there's an overarching work that they do, that the angels minister to the entire nation of Israel. Okay, so I put that in there. Now, Brent doesn't talk about this. I added this to what Brent had to say about angels. Other comments or thoughts about angels and their involvement in the giving of the word, especially as it relates to the Old Testament. Not the New Testament as much, but the Old Testament. New Testament, and that's the comparison in Hebrews, Old Testament, New Testament, Old Law, New Law.
Well, that last verse also bears both on the Old Testament and the New Testament, because God did bear witness with signs and wonders all through the Old Testament as well as in the New Testament.
Yeah, that's a good point. He did that in the Old Testament, but grammatically, I think this last sentence in verse 4 is a reference back to this phrase, those that heard him, that would be the apostles.
Yeah. it would be possible for it to refer to all of it, though.
Well, in a sense, it does. But grammatically, it refers to those that heard him. So, yeah, but you're right. You would also have to conclude that God was bearing witness to the Old Testament just by, you know, by virtue of prophecies that came true. God told Daniel, you're going to be in captivity for 70 years, and you will come out. So when God brings them out, that's bearing witness. It's true. It's just that this statement, I think, in the context is referring to the apostle. Yeah, Bill, you have your hand up?
Yeah, something that's a little confusing, that maybe it's the only place I see it in the Bible. Acts 12:15. An angel has come and released Peter from prison.
Okay.
And he's knocking at the gate, and the people inside don't believe the maid that he's there. And they said, it is his angel. Do we become an angel when we die?
That might have been their conception. It might also have been just a conclusion that this was an angel who appeared as Peter. Because angels did take on the form of men.
Okay.
And they would have been intimately familiar with that, because at this point in time in the book of Acts, the church is primarily made up of Jewish Christians, and especially in Jerusalem. There were Gentiles that had been saved at this point, but the church is still primarily a Jewish institution in Jerusalem in Acts 12. So they would have been familiar with this idea that someone could, an angel could appear and look like someone. Because they did take on the form of men.
That whole story, the angel coming apparently put the guards to sleep and took Peter out, and he walked him out, and the gate opened by itself, and the angel disappeared. It is just so wonderful and so amazing.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And it was so amazing that the people that had gathered to pray about Peter being in prison thought it's impossible that Peter is standing at the door. So, but it was really, in fact, Peter. He had been let go. Somebody else had their hand up and I missed it. I didn't mean to miss it. And folks at home, you have to understand, if you want to make a comment, just say something, because I can't see your faces from where I am here on the podium. Okay, so there is a sense in which angels care for individuals. They care for or minister to a broader population, which would be the nation of Israel. And then there's a sense in which the angels deliver judgment. Now, this we don't tend to think of as being a positive thing. This is, in a sense, a scary thing. In Psalm 78, David records his impression about the plagues in Israel. Okay? And he names off the various plagues. So it's pretty clear that Psalm 78, beginning at about verse 40, is David talking about what happened in the plagues. He sent flies, he sent darkness, he sent pestilence. So that's what David is talking about. David says it this way. He cast upon them, upon Egypt, the fierceness of his anger, wrath, and indignation, and trouble by sending evil angels among them. So, in a sense, the plagues in the Old Testament were executed by angels. Now, in Exodus, the 12th chapter, verse 23, Moses writes about the plagues, and specifically in verse 23, he's talking about the Passover, the death of the firstborn. And this is the way he says it. Now, understand that most people would call the spirit that passed through them on that night the angel of death. If you read modern popular commentary, that's the way they would refer to it. This is the angel of death. But just be aware, this is what Moses actually says. The Lord will pass through and smite the Egyptians. When he seeth the blood on the lintel on the two side posts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come into your houses and smite you. The spirit that carried out the death of the firstborn, as it's described in Exodus, is not called the angel of death. That's a term that we supply, that we apply to that person or that being. And in fact, Moses may indicate that it was Jesus that was doing this. Yeah, Carol.
You just said that in the angel, what we call the angel of death, was the destroying angels. In my Psalm 78, verse 49, it says a band of destroying angels. So
it's, yeah, right.
Not evil angels, but they're destroying. So they're not necessarily doing good, but they're not really doing evil. They're just destroying.
When I quoted this from the King James translation, they're called evil angels in the King James translation. But I think the point is, what they were doing was apparently evil, because it caused the death of the firstborn. So, most of us would look at that and say, well, that was a bad thing. That was an evil thing.
But I think destroying angels, to me, describes it better than to put an evil category on God's angels. I don't think his angels could be evil, but the people might feel that way about it. But if God's sending them to destroy, it's not that that's...
That's a good point. They are not evil because they're carrying out God's purpose of destruction. But nevertheless, people would look at that and say, hey, that's an evil angel. So it's a good point, and it's one that I think bears on a lot of things that happen. We tend to think of anything that is that causes us grief is an evil thing. Yeah.
Is that where the idea and the feeling like of Job's friends, that if this evil all came on you, you must have done something wrong? In other words, the destruction to them equated that somebody must have done something wrong. It's the evil, the sin that you must have done. It seems to me that it sort of correlates. I don't know if it does.
I don't know, but it would make sense. In some ways, it would make sense. I don't know where Job's friends get that. But then it's not just Job's friends that made that mistake. Remember, the apostles even made that mistake. They found that man was born blind in John 9. They said, who sinned? Was it him or his parents? And Jesus, of course, is the commentator at that point. He says, You're wrong. You just don't understand. This happened to prove the power of God. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Go ahead, Bill.
One interesting incident when David had to choose between three things, and God's angels came and was destroying among the people. And then it told David, offer a sacrifice and I'll stop this. So he was the destroyer, but he was also the one that instituted the end of it as well.
Yeah, you're right. And the event that you're referring to is 2 Samuel 24, verse 15 through 17. David, towards the end of his reign, David numbered his fighting men. And God had said, don't ever do that. I don't want you to number your army so that you'll know how big it is. And if you know how big it is, you'll attribute your victories to the size of your army. God said, don't count your army. He did it anyway. The Lord then responded. The Lord sent a pestilence upon Israel from the morning to the time appointed, and there died the people from, and there died of the people from Dan even to Beersheba 70,000 men. When the angel of the Lord stretched his hand upon Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord repented him of the evil and said to the angel that destroyed the people, it is enough. Stay now thine hand. The angel of the Lord was by the threshing place of Araunah, the Jebusite. David spake to the Lord when he saw the angel that smote the people, and he said, Lord, I have sinned and done wickedly. But these sheep, what have they done? Let thine hand, I pray thee, be against me and not against my father's house. So don't destroy the people because of what I did, counting the people. But the angel was clearly involved in this judgment that came from God. And 70,000 people died. This was a terrible time. And David made the sacrifice at the threshing floor of Araunah and stayed the plague. And that's of course, to David's credit. It's a serious thing to be the king, because you can bring down awful things on the people. So, yeah, Bill.
Just imagine this angel, the power that he had exhibited, what had been done. And David stood before him and put himself in peril to save his people.
Yeah.
He was a man after God's own heart. He was a wonderful person.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely correct. David is willing to say, in the face of the angel destroying 70,000 people, David says, don't take it out on the people, take it out on me. But that's amazing. But it also reminds me that being in the position of king is an awesome responsibility. That in the same way that being in the position of elder today is an awesome responsibility. We're not going to see the elders cause the death of 70,000 people across America, but it is illustrative, and it's something to be considered when we think about serving as elders. It's an awesome task, an awesome responsibility. So, the angel of the Lord is involved in this judgment against David by killing 70,000 people. Now, it's not just Old Testament where the angel is involved in judgment. We think about angels being involved in judgment as kind of clustered in the Old Testament period. But it happened in the New Testament period as well. Acts 12 is a judgment that came on Herod. Herod, of course, is the Roman authority. It says, upon a set day, Herod, arrayed in royal apparel, sat upon his throne, made an oration unto them. The people gave a shout, saying, it's the voice of a God and not a man. Look at how great he is. Immediately, the angel of the Lord smote him because he gave not God the glory. He was eaten of worms and he gave up the ghost. Okay. So this here's the angel who is involved in a judgment in our time period. Not just Old Testament time period, but our time period, the last days. I wish that I could be like David. And whenever something happens, I could see the angel of the Lord doing it. But I can't. Did the angel of the Lord cause the Nazi empire to fall because of their wickedness? I don't know. I don't know. I'll be honest. I'm kind of like the Apostle Paul. He's talking about something that the Spirit is doing, and he's talking about something good that happened when he talks about Onesimus, Philemon's slave, running away. He says, who knows? Perhaps he ran away so I could convert him. So he saw something good. He couldn't identify the source with absolute certainty, but he could say, maybe. And I think about Esther and Mordecai. And Mordecai goes to Esther and says, you've got to intervene because the king is going to kill us all. And Esther says, and I'm paraphrasing all of this. Esther says, wait a minute, you don't understand. I don't call for the king. I wait until he calls for me. If I say something and he doesn't like it, he lowers his scepter and it's off with my head. And Mordecai says, that's okay. Maybe you were put in the kingdom for a time like this. And if not, God will raise up some other deliverer. So Mordecai is watching all of this, and he's kind of like me. He has to say, I don't know for sure, Esther, but you have to act like you know. So go ahead and say something. And if it works out and the king lops your head off, God will figure out another way. Then what we'll know is that God didn't choose you. That seems like a kind of a bad choice in a way. You know, maybe God put me here to say something. And maybe he didn't. And the way I'll know the difference is whether I get my head cut off. Yeah, Carol.
But in her particular case, the fact that she wasn't known to be a Jewess.
Oh, it was even worse.
He says, it's going to come around. Somebody's going to know. Somebody's going to say something's going to happen. So whether you die when he enacts it or whether you die going to save your people, I think it's more of a positive than a negative. But I think about the fact that it says that we're not supposed to worry about whether God saves people. And you may only spread the seed, but whether you spread the seed to somebody, whether it takes hold, if God is hoping for a person, he's spreading the seed, and you don't know whether what you're doing spreads the seed. Maybe as Bill says, you might just open up the door and push them in and say good day or whatever, you know. But the seed of God, the Holy Spirit,
gets
planted. And it's just like this. That's one of the things about God that just boggles my little mind compared to his great big one, how he can see through time and say, okay, I need to raise this person up and I need to, you know, I need to make sure that Rahab has children and Ruth has children and seeing that all through time and playing it out. I mean, how great is that?
Yeah.
And the hairs on our head.
Yeah, and the problem is that I'm this little speck in time, and I'm trying to look at what happened and say, okay, that was the angel of God that did that, and I can't.
Yeah.
The best I can say is maybe it was. Yeah.
In Esther's case, the king had a great love for her, and it was because of who and what she was. She was God's servant. She was an obedient and sweet woman. And she was willing to take her life in her hands. But on the other hand, the king was not particularly happy that he issued this edict. And he was willing to have it overridden if she could find a way. But it had to be overridden, and when it was, the one that masterminded it, him and his house were utterly destroyed.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The gallows that he built, he was hoist on his own petard. He was hoist on his own gallows.
And the king, he had no problem with her being a Jewess. He loved her.
Yeah, but she didn't. I'm not sure she understood that.
She was afraid before it happened.
I would have been. I've been in those situations. And I can say without any question that spirit beings intervene in the affairs of this world. They did then, they still do.
There are times in our lives, like when the IRS calls, and our adrenaline rushes, and we're scared half to death. And that's happened to me. And I asked God, I said, I've got to face this. Give me strength. Get it over with. They're not going to put me to death. I don't have anything they can take away. You know, and get it over with. And that, just having that attitude and saying, I'm going in there with my head held high, is such a relief. Without faith, I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's faith tempered by a realization that I can't be 100% sure. Paul couldn't be 100% sure that Onesimus ran away so that he could convert him. You look at the situation, Onesimus, runaway slave, He runs away from his master. The place he goes is wrong. That's the place to get lost in a crowd. And of all the bad luck, he runs into his old master's best friend. He runs into Paul. And Paul converts him. So I'm not sure that I would look at that and say, I know why he ran away. I don't. Maybe he ran away just because he wanted to run away. I know that the spirit world is involved with this world. I just can't always see it. Okay, let's look at one more passage. This is Matthew, the 13th chapter. And again, we've said that the angels are involved in judgment in the last day. And we talked about Herod, and he stands as an example of something in our day. Matthew 13, he takes this all the way down to the day of judgment, the final day of judgment, big J, judgment day. Kingdom of heaven is likened to a net that was cast into the sea, gathered of every kind, which when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into vessels, but they cast the bad away. So shall it be at the end of the world. The angels shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just, and they will cast them into the furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. So in the final day, judgment day, the angels are going to be involved in separating the wheat from the chaff, separating the good from the bad. Right now, we aren't separated. The wicked are still around. One day is coming when God will take care of all of that. The angels are involved in that. Other thoughts about angels and their roles. And next week we're going to talk a little bit about how some angels were condemned by God.